Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Speakeasy Marketing Roundtable. My name is Dave Charest, Content Manager here at Constant Contact. And today we're answering some of your top social media questions that we received from a recent webinar. What was the name of that webinar? Social media for
Small Businesses and Nonprofits. Very straightforward.
Yes. I'm drinking a Smithwick's Premium Irish Ale. Tell me like me hat, Shannon. That's my Irish one. From, you know, the movie? Anyone get points for that? Tell me you like me hat. No? Far and Away? Tom Cruise? Nicole Kidman?
No.
All right, then. Who else is with me?
Was that to me? I'm Ryan Pinkham, a content developer here at Constant Contact, and I'm drinking a Samuel Adams Rebel IPA.
What do you want to be when you grow up, Ryan?
What do I want to be?
A rebel.
Still working on figuring that out.
All right, good. Who else is here?
I am Danielle Cormier, and I am the social media community manager here at Constant Contact, and I'm drinking a Mike's Hard Cranberry Lemonade. It's very sweet.
I'm Kristen Curtis, social media content developer, and I'm drinking some sort of red wine.
Mm, yum. So, all right, we've got a bunch of questions here, so we're just going to kind of rifle through them and give you our best answers for those questions. And the first one is, what time of day is best to tweet? It continues on, if our office is 9 to 5, should we only post during these hours or should we continue after hours? And is there a good time to post on each medium? So we'll start with Twitter first. What do we think there? Is there a best time for that?
The best time is going to be when your audience will see the tweets and read them. So maybe survey your audience or just watch their behavior or just test out different times to try to figure out when your audience is most likely going to be on Twitter and checking their stream.
Yeah.
It might be during work hours, but it might not be. But if it's outside of work hours, maybe you'd put a little note in your description that you only can answer customer service tweets from 9 to 5 if that's how you want to sort of handle your Twitter account.
And I think, you know, you mentioned customer service. I think it really depends on what are the types of things that you're going to be doing on Twitter and what's the nature of your business, right? Because there could be opportunities where maybe you are on, you know, it's just the times of day that you're on and you have a particular group of people that you notice engage with you the most. So you try to be on during those times because those are people that retweet for you and do those types of things. So it's really about kind of figuring that out, figuring out who your audience is and who you're trying to connect with. And then if you are using something for a customer service standpoint, well, then there's a situation where you may have set hours for customer service as opposed to just, you know, kind of setting things up. But I guess the idea, too, is that there are times where you can just set up or post you know, set stuff to auto-post for you at certain times. I don't want to say auto-post, but
schedule.
Schedule your tweets so that you're hitting areas or parts of times where other people may be on that aren't on the times that you're necessarily on.
Yeah, one of the things that I read that I thought was really interesting was that you may actually want to try scheduling in the middle of an hour, so like 1:05, mm-hmm. where if you think about it, a lot of people are in meetings from 12 to 1, and mm-hmm. then they get back to their desk and they check their social media as soon as they get there. That may be true for your audience. It may also be that they wake up and turn over and look at their phone, and that's what they do. So you really have to think about the behavior of your audience.
Yeah.
And one of the best ways to do that is just to make sure you're always looking at your analytics and seeing what's working, what's not.
Maybe one thing to mention, too, is the difference between a site like Twitter versus a Facebook, where Twitter is more of a real-time network, whereas that the time you're posting it is the time that somebody would see it. So if they miss it at that time, unless they go visit your profile, they probably aren't going to see that tweet. Whereas on Facebook, you can post something at, you know, 1 p.m., but people may not be seeing it based on how people engage with it. They may see it when they log in at 5 p.m. Like, you know what I mean? So it really kind of depends on the nature of the network and the algorithms they're using, too. So I guess the takeaway here is that regardless of whatever network you're using, it's really based on your audience and how your audience is using that particular network, right?
I would say usually it's probably not 9 to 5 because most people are usually at work. So, I mean, that's not always true, but for the most part.
Dolly Parton would disagree. horrible jokes today. Anyway, so is it okay to post the same content to each of these social networks each day? Or should a Facebook post be different from a Twitter post?
Is it okay? I suppose. Do we want you to? No. The main reason really is that each platform operates differently.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, the fact of the matter is you're not giving anybody a reason to follow you in more than one area if you're showing the same content. And the conversations are different and the way that people talk are different. And that's true for each network. So it is really important that if you are going to be on different networks, to make sure you have the time and the bandwidth to be able to actually do it, because you do want to change it up a little bit. It could be the same asset.
Yeah.
But the conversation needs to be a little different.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing, right? You can share. I think you can share some of the same stuff, but it's just the way you like kind of talk about it and do those sort of things. Mm-hmm. And Chris, I know in the post you recently did talking about people like auto posting from Facebook to Twitter or things like that. Yeah. It's just like things like that you want to avoid because you're going to have a lot of times you're going to have stuff that probably doesn't belong there, yeah. or you're just not really present, right? Mm-hmm. So people want to respond to something, you don't even know where these things are being sent out or when people are seeing it or where or anything like that. So I think, I think there is some balance there where you can do some of the same stuff from place to place, but maybe the language you use or the ways you talk about it.
Yeah. I think, again, this falls back to one, I guess, you know, as we're saying, we're kind of understanding the nuance of each network and how each network works and how people use those networks. But then also, again, it falls back to understanding who your audience is. So I know, you know, there, one of the things I've noticed is that sometimes there's a big contingent of people on Twitter who hate Facebook. So if you're there sharing links to things that you have on Facebook, it pisses them off. Like, I want to go to Facebook. Why are you sending me to Facebook? Right? Yeah. So you need to kind of recognize those things about your audience. So if you're building up a following on Twitter that hates Facebook, well, you know you're not going to want to share links to things that you're doing on Facebook on Twitter. You know, so it really boils down to what you're finding out about your audience. Again, it's about having that engagement with them. You're not just shooting stuff out. You're actually interacting and being... Ryan, what is it you say usually? It's not about having a presence, but being present.
Yeah.
Really creative.
Yeah. I tweeted that, quote this week, and a lot of people are retweeting it.
I'm sure someone else has said it somewhere.
Did you sure you came up with that?
I think I've used it in like 14 blog posts
already. It's now in mind.
Hey, you got something good? Go with it. You're going to ride that right with it. But that's a great way to think about it.
Yeah, the one thing I would want to say, too, is that you may think, oh, well, I'm just going to post from Facebook to Twitter because I want to be on Twitter. But the fact of the matter is that you may actually be hurting yourself. Because if I'm looking at you, I'm looking for you on Twitter, and I find you, but everything you're posting is a Facebook link and half of them is cut off because it's more than 140 characters. It's not making me any happier than if I just didn't find you on Twitter.
Yeah. Cool. Moving on. If I cannot pin info more than a couple times a week, should we not use Pinterest?
I think this goes with what Kristen was just saying. If you don't have the bandwidth to really dedicate to that channel, then maybe it's not a channel that you need to be on, or maybe your audience isn't there.
Yeah.
So you really should dedicate a significant amount of time to each of the channels that you decide that you're going to be on, not just sort of like half do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you really need to figure out why you're there. Once you figure out why you're there, then you'll know what networks you need to be on.
Yeah.
Pinterest is really great for website referral, and if you can figure that out, it's a great place to spend your time. But if it's not what your goal is, there's no reason for you to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really what it boils down to, right? Is like, what is it that you're trying to do, and does it make sense for what it is that you're trying to accomplish? You know, because I can think of instances where, for example, if I'm doing work with the theater where, you know, we may not be posting to Pinterest all the time, but if we have a show coming up, Pinterest is a great place to post photos or production photos about the particular production, and creates kind of like a visual pin board of all our different productions, right? And we could send people there when we're promoting that particular production, as opposed to just using it as a place where people are going to be interacting with us all the time on Pinterest. It's just another way for us to send people there. So I think it really boils down to how you're going to end up using it and how it fits in your overall strategy, right? Can I post my Constant Contact newsletter to my Facebook page? And can I post my Constant Contact newsletter to my LinkedIn page?
I've always think this is like kind of an interesting thing because you always want your newsletter content to be sort of exclusive, right? You want there to be this kind of a specific reason for signing up that maybe they can't get in other places. I think you can find a balance. I think if it's like your monthly newsletter, I think it can be a great way to kind of get exposure for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you might also, when you're doing those sort of things, also look for opportunities to keep some of the stuff exclusive and maybe do exclusive announcements or send it out first and maybe share it on your page the next day. Maybe not share everything right away.
Yeah, like kind of tease what maybe is in the upcoming newsletter or what was in your past newsletter and why they should sign up.
Yeah, and again, I think it goes back to what we were just saying before, where it's like if you're going to be sharing it in different places, the same newsletter in different places, kind of think about the language you're going to be using. Obviously on Facebook or LinkedIn it might be a little different, or Twitter and things like that. So
and honestly, it's a lot of content. I mean, if you take the time to break it up, that's you have true. A lot of social media content that you can use over the next couple weeks, and teasing people to say, hey, want more of this, you know, join my newsletter. So it's definitely a good way to curate your own content.
So I guess that's a big thing, right? It's a good way to get more of your content out there and give people reasons to, like, hey, maybe expose your newsletter to folks, but also look for those opportunities where something is going to be exclusive. A good way to think about it is that, if you were going to give somebody 15% off their next purchase for joining your newsletter, Like, that's not something you'd want to share on your Facebook page, right? Because it's an exclusive for people joining your newsletter. So it's like, yeah, definitely think of that through and look. So there are opportunities you're going to want to share it and opportunities you're not going to.
Right.
So.
And I think you got to pay attention to the value of getting those social connections onto your contact list as well. Like, you know, why you would actually want to do that. One, just to expose your content, but also it's a way of getting people there, because that's when you really start to really own those contacts. And they're not just, you know, people who like your page or who follow you on Twitter, but they're people who have actually given you contact information and kind of become more part of your business that way.
Yep.
I think that's really where the real value of doing it comes from.
Cool. Here's another question here. What is the best way to get my Facebook fans to follow me over to Twitter or Google Plus?
Ask them. Tell them that you're there.
Yeah.
A lot of times they may not be following you because they don't know that you have a channel on Google Plus or on Twitter.
Yeah. Now that's a short answer, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
To let them know. But as we kind of mentioned before, each network has its own personality. So you kind of got to give somebody a reason on why they would want to follow you. What are they going to get that's different over there? You know, so really kind of, you almost have to compartmentalize things. Damn you, Smithwicks. and, they, you know, think, like, what can I do here that's going to be different from what I'm doing over on Facebook? Because if you're doing the same thing, well, then really what's the point of me following you at that other place?
Yeah.
And one of the things I always suggest when people ask, you know, how do I get people from my email list to Facebook is always to show them some sort of example of this is what I'm doing on Facebook, come and join me. And you can do the exact same thing on Facebook for Twitter or LinkedIn or whatever. Let them know what they're going to find, and they'll more than likely go and find you.
Yep. So we've got a series of LinkedIn questions here. So the first one being, how do you get followers on LinkedIn?
Same thing.
Right, yeah. All right.
Also, just putting a link in your newsletter or on your website so people can just get to you from that spot, too.
Yeah,
I think when it comes to any social network, you just have to remember that every place your customers may find information about you, you want to make sure that they know everywhere you are. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, your email signature, that's your email newsletter, that's your website, that's every other social network. You want to make sure that they're all connected in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's important to point out, too, that there's two different ways that business might want to use LinkedIn, right? It's one of those networks where actually kind of a personal account or, you know, profile is something that you might actually still want to use for business purposes, but also you might have a company page and those sort of thing. So you want to pay attention to sort of what the experience is on each of those, right? Where you're trying to get someone to maybe connect with you, if it's a personal page, but also maybe follow your updates on a company page. Mm-hmm. So you got to think about, you know, why you're connecting, why you're using these different places, you know, as you're trying to get people to connect with you in these places.
Very cool. What is the recommended percent of varying types of content on LinkedIn?
Well, you can post any kind of content on LinkedIn, but what really seems to work the best, I think, is links. Because if you think about the network, a lot of people are coming to sort of consume information and read about different articles and news related to your industry. So I would focus on links, but also SlideShare presentations and videos display really nicely. You can play them right from the newsfeed of LinkedIn, which you can't necessarily do on all the other social networks. So I think that that's sort of a unique way to be a little bit more eye-catching.
Cool. What about company pages versus being in a group? Which is better?
Well, it depends on what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest difference between a company page and a group is you can't actually post as your company in a group. You have to post as your personal self, as well as people aren't necessarily following you. They're in there to have a conversation. So it really depends on what you're trying to do. Groups are great to build your personal network, but if you're trying to really build your brand, then a company page would make more sense.
Yeah, and I think it depends on, you know, again, as you're mentioning, you know, what is it you're trying to do? Like, if you're trying to get involved with an engaged community talking about a particular subject that may relate to your business, well, then yes, that makes perfect sense for you to be there and be involved. As yourself, because that will, you know, spur interest in your business and, and the things it is that you do. So it really depends on, you know, it's kind of a either or it just really depends.
One does not replace the other.
Exactly. Is there a way to get analytics for Twitter without a promoted account? We like to keep track of follows, retweets, etc. to report to funders. We're a nonprofit.
Yes, so there's definitely a workaround. If you have a Hootsuite account, they actually allow you to create analytics for all networks that are connected. And one of the things that's really cool with the Hootsuite analytics is it actually shows you click-throughs of each one of your links. So mm-hmm. you can see not only the retweets and favorites and mentions and all that, but you can also see the behind-the-scenes stuff of mm-hmm. what are people clicking on and what's really working.
Yeah, I think that MarketMe Suite, which is one of our new integrations, mm-hmm. also has some analytics behind some of the social media networks yeah. that you can connect with your different profiles.
It's not necessarily an analytics thing, but one of the things, too, is if you look at one of the things I enjoy about the Twitter app itself is that it actually shows you kind of what happens in terms of engagement with the tweets that you're putting out there. So you can see when people are retweeting your things, you can see who did that, mm-hmm. and you can see who favorited something. So that's usually if you look at the Discover or Connect
yeah.
tab? I forget which one it is. But when you look at that, I mean, that's a great way to say, oh, this person favorited this tweet of mine. They may be interested in more content along these lines, or, you know, here's somebody that retweeted it and is interested in that, maybe I'll follow that person. So it's a good way to really organically start to see the things that people are responding to without, like, just numbers, but actually just looking and, you know, giving it a flip through once in a while and saying, hey, you know, this might be worth exploring.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to find the people that are kind of most engaged with the stuff that you're sharing, because
yeah.
I always mm-hmm. sort of say, like, you know, we do blog posts
yep.
and things come up. It's like I see a lot of the same people a lot of times.
Yep.
And you can get a sense for who maybe your most engaged people are, and that's yep. really what that's great for, and kind of taking the raw numbers out of it if you're not
yeah.
really a numbers person, but just seeing
yeah.
kind of the personal interactions that really
yeah.
give you that insight.
Cool. Should my personal and business Facebook presence be kept separate?
Yes. yeah, I mean, we were kind of having a discussion with this before, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, good rule of thumb, yes, right? You want to have a page, so you don't want people, if you're on, you know, have a personal account where you're sharing pictures of your kids and all these
yeah.
things, and you don't want them to think that that's where you're doing your business. And a lot
mm-hmm.
of people do make that mistake and do that.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, there's the thing where if you have a personal brand where you're just one person, you're
yeah.
trying to get people to connect with you, it couldn't be a good way to do those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
I think if you're promoting your business, I think generally you want to be sticking with the page. But
especially if you have the type of business that attracts foot traffic. So if they need to find your address or your hours, or people might mm-hmm. want to check into your business or leave a review or a star rating, then
mm-hmm.
that's definitely a good motivator to have a business page rather than just a personal page.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things to remember, too. One is that Facebook actually connects your personal and your business, but it doesn't mean that your personal friends can see your business page and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
It's more the convenience for yourself. The other thing is if you do have a personal page and you want a business page and you think, you know, I have all of these friends and they're really business connections, you can merge a personal into a business.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing is that you can actually create a business page and then make sure that you tell your personal friends, if those are a lot of your business connections, hey, just so you know, I just created this new business page, come over and
mm-hmm.
like me.
Yeah.
And that's one of the ways to get people over, as well as obviously using your email newsletter
yeah.
too.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, you know, there may be instances, again, depending on the nature of your business, like I'm thinking of a perfect example is like there's this restaurant that I really love to go to, and they're kind of, you know, started in the early days of Facebook, and they have a profile that they're using for their business, right? And it's like, well, you know, I want to connect with you, but I don't want you to have if you connect with somebody as a profile, like they have access to go look at your stuff.
Yeah, and then you have to send a friend request.
Yeah,
and
like,
then you have to be the person managing and accepting all those too. It makes a little bit more work
right,
for
so
you.
Right, so I don't know who's going to be managing that profile when it's set up as a business, so I don't necessarily
mm-hmm.
want to give you access to my personal life, you know, as a consumer,
mm-hmm.
you know, but where I was definitely connect with you as a page. So I think it's really understanding the nature of your business and things, because there are other times where, you know, depending on if you have run a business that's really a lot dependent on the personal connections you make, connecting with those people may make sense, you know, from your personal profile and not a business page. But I can think the idea is that you definitely do need to have one for your business, because you're going to get analytics from that as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. How could we forget that? So last series of questions here. We have, do you have a recommendation for using LinkedIn? And what are your opinions of Pinterest versus Instagram? Did I say LinkedIn? Do you have a recommendation using Instagram? Did I say LinkedIn?
Yeah,
I did. Okay.
Yeah.
I meant to say Instagram. Strike that. Reverse it. Now, so using Instagram. So
I think Instagram is a good way to give your followers a behind-the-scenes look at your business, show off like things that are happening right in your store, at
mm-hmm.
your business, or what they don't get to see every day, or what's new and what's happening. Not necessarily for links, or maybe not for linking directly to something you're trying to sell, like trying to drive any traffic to your website, but sort of just to like stay top of mind and give some exclusive content.
Yeah, I think one of the best things to do if you're starting too is just start using it as a creation tool mm-hmm. instead of worrying about building your followers. Mm-hmm. That will come, especially if you're using it correctly. But yeah. one of the best things about Instagram is it allows you to share very easily to your Facebook page.
Yeah. So what are your opinions of Pinterest versus Instagram? I think the difference here is that they're really just different networks, right? I mean, Instagram is a place where you're taking photos and you're sharing those photos there, whereas mm-hmm. Pinterest is more of yes, it's a very visual network, but you're actually sharing links more than you are just
straight up images,
right? And
they operate very differently. Yeah. I mean, the hugest thing about Pinterest is the SEO value and the fact that you can actually drive somebody back to your website. Mm-hmm. Whereas Instagram's not, that's not really the point of Instagram. Mm-hmm. So it just, again, like most answers, it depends on what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Pinterest, it's a little bit better of a platform for displaying your products or past work you've done with clients and mm-hmm. sort of just having a portfolio of all the things that you do right mm-hmm. on one network.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll catch you next time on the Speakeasy Marketing Roundtable. Bye-bye now.